Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Now, most of us are familiar with the term overthinking and overanalyzing, but less often from our lips do we hear the term overspeaking, which, like the other two, can negatively impact an effective communication situation. Our guest today is an expert in helping individuals deal with all three of these concepts, but today he'll enlighten us just on the one, overspeaking. He's Joel Schwartzberg, and for almost two decades, he's been a communications coach, a speechwriter, and he's also the author of The Language of Leadership, How to Engage and Inspire Your Team, and Get to the Point, Sharpen Your Message, and Make Your Words Matter. He's a former U.S. national and state champion in collegiate public speaking. Joel was also inducted into the National Forensic Association Hall of Fame in 2002. Joel's insights on effective communication have been featured in many publications, including Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, CNBC, Newsweek, and Inc.com, as well as a Toastmaster magazine. Joel's latest article, Stop Talking So Much, Why People Overspeak and How to Keep Discussions Concise, appears in the January 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Coming to us today from New Jersey, where he lives with his wife and more rescue cats than you can imagine. Joel Schwartzberg, welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's also a privilege and a pleasure to be here with you and in front of so many Toastmasters who I admire and encourage.
That quip about the cats just cracked me up.
You'll never get me to say how many. Let me just tell you that right now.
Well, you had mentioned that there was fur on your microphone, so I think that may have given it away.
Right.
I was looking through our archives, and the last time we spoke was in 2022. It was episode 213, Techniques for Supercharging Your Listening Skills. This time, we're going to turn the tables around, and instead of talking about listening, we're going to be talking about speaking and overspeaking in particular. When I first read the article, I have to admit the first thing that popped into my head was a salesperson who just keeps talking after he makes the sale, only to turn around to stick a foot in his mouth.
Yeah, Greg, that's a great example. In fact, when I coach clients, I often tell them, once you make your point, stop talking. So you don't cloud or complicate that point. And you're also, when you stop, you're giving your audience time to process that, to digest it, to apply it to what they're doing, to think about it. So it's just as important to know when to stop as it is how to start.
Oh, that's super. So to kick things off, let's just talk about overspeaking. So Is overspeaking, is it the same as talking too much? And why is it just so common, particularly in the workplace?
Yeah, well, we're all familiar with overthinking, and that's where I began. I began to see people and experience professionals, even people who are very accustomed to speaking and leadership, and they would talk too much or they would overthink. And I think, well, overthinking would be fine if it was kept inside their heads because we're not doing meetings by telepathy yet. But the minute they open their mouths, they just start talking. And often we say, well, that person likes to hear themselves speak. They have a high degree of self-esteem and they're just very proud of themselves. But when I did some research and I spoke to some people, I found that there are lots of reasons people overspeak, which again is the manifestation of overthinking. They want a perfect solution and they're holding out for it. Or they're over-focused on adverse events. Maybe they're terrified of saying something wrong or making a wrong judgment, so they postpone it. And we've heard this effect. There's a term for it called analysis paralysis. And maybe you or some of your audience are aware of it. And it literally stops the progress of a conversation and thus a project. And that's why the consequences are so severe.
I'm just thinking, as you're sharing this, I'm thinking, there must be a reason why all of a sudden you came up with this topic. Something must have happened. Am I right?
You are right. There is one person, and I won't say how recently or how long ago. I would just say that this person was a professional. This person not only overspoke, but she called it out, in fact. She would say often, I may be overthinking, but this probably won't happen, but, well, it goes without saying, but. Or my favorite, well, I know we're running out of time in this meeting, but I just have a three-part question I want to get in at the last minute. So sometimes overspeakers will give themselves away, but I think they're trying to absolve themselves of their responsibility merely by saying, oh, I'm aware of my problem. Now that I've said that, I'm going to go ahead and overspeak. That's not a solution. The solution is looking for ways to have in your brain to know when you're saying too much and when you've completed your point.
Can you give us an example of perhaps what this looks like in a meeting?
Sure. It happens when there's a meeting where there's a very important aspect that needs to be discussed. Like imagine a school and the teachers are around the meeting with the administrators. And what's most important is to discuss certain students, how they're doing, what they need. But instead, 90% of the meeting was spent in analysis of what the school might look like in 5 years, what the admissions programs are like, the fun teacher event that they had recently, and they leave the last 2 minutes for something that should have really been the bulk of the meeting. That's often one of the biggest manifestations of overspeaking. It's really this lack of progress. And you know, if you've ever had an agenda at a meeting and you only got to five and you had 10 things on the agenda, that was because of overspeaking. People were not aware of the time there was. More importantly, the priorities and the goals of that meeting. And what's more, they were not respectful of the other people in the room who had valuable things to address.
We're thinking about a parent-teacher meeting. Sometimes I can understand that they lose track of time, but I'm also thinking maybe they're actually trying to avoid the inevitable. Maybe they're trying to avoid what they really need to talk about.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny you bring up parent-teacher meetings. I've heard of parent-teacher meetings where the parent does all the talking. Listen, that's not the goal of a parent-teacher meeting. Your goal as a parent is to listen about your child's development, any challenges, to have a conversation about how you can partner with that teacher for your child's success, not for you to be a publicist for your child. That just wastes the time and misses the point of that meeting.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you know, I like to look for little nuggets that help, often with alliteration, because I'm a fan of alliteration. And one of them I talk about in the article is understanding the difference between a concern and a curiosity. A concern is something that you need to address because it is a challenge and an obstacle. A curiosity is sort of like, this just popped into my head. I wonder if that could possibly be better handled in a Zoom meeting, in an email, even in a chat. So really try to focus on the concerns, not the curiosities. I also call this a need to know versus a neat to know.
Neat to know.
Even in presentations, you want to focus on the need to know, not the neat to know.
Are there any other telltale signs that someone is overspeaking?
There are times, besides the calling themselves out and the signs that they're overspeaking, really the biggest demonstration of it is if you come away from a meeting or an interaction where the goals were simply not met. Sometimes you think that's about time management or it's a poor agenda or the meeting wasn't long enough. But really what it is about is people not having good word or thought economy and understanding what the goals were for the meeting and thus how that could inform the communication goals for the meeting. One thing I found interesting, I worked at a company where they saw this happening time and time again. And I want to single out one solution because it's so novel and very few people do it. And that is making one person a rabbit hole minder. And basically, you're authorizing that person in the meeting to say and even interrupt. Sorry to interrupt, but I sense that we're getting off topic and I'm concerned that we're not going to get to the other major topics on our agenda. So I suggest we move on from here and we table this for another meeting or another discussion. The beauty of having a rabbit hole minder role at a meeting, not unlike the note taker role or the meeting leader role, is that nobody has to feel bad about interrupting a meeting, and we've seen this before, saying, I'm sorry to interrupt everyone, but I think we're getting off topic here. You know, you feel guilty doing that. It feels like you're doing something rude. But if it's someone's job in the meeting to do that, then all is forgiven because that's their role.
I love that because in meetings, I recall there are people that do that. And sometimes if you're trying to speak, you're trying to get your point across, maybe you're not overspeaking, you get annoyed if somebody actually says that. But if they're assigned that task, it makes it a lot easier to swallow.
Right. It's much easier to be a professional referee than an amateur referee.
Yeah, exactly. I know in some meetings, they also have these things called the parking lot related to things right. that you can put on the agenda for later if they happen to come up.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's make that a physical parking lot, like a page on a cloud site or even a piece of paper in the room that says, all right, and someone physically writes that into the parking lot. This will be addressed later when we have more time.
So you sort of partially answered my next question, and I was making reference back to something you referred to in the article, and you wrote, curbing overspeaking and its paralyzing effects requires catching yourself overthinking. Mm-hmm. And I was initially wondering whether or not there's a direct correlation between the two, and it sounds like there is.
Yeah, like what I write about and get to the point and what I coach is that it starts with your mind. If you don't have a point, you are going to ramble. That's just the way it works. It doesn't matter if you've given one speech or 100 speeches, if you're a senior vice president or an intern, they ramble and they overspeak because they don't know their point. So the only way to cure that is to understand what your point is, even set up your points in advance so that you can state them in a way that gets you the response you're looking for. And what I mean by a point is a proposal. A contention, not just a thought. And the difference sounds like this. Hey, I want to throw out this idea. I don't know, maybe we can discuss it. It's just something that came into my head. That will get you 20 minutes of discussion. But if you say, you know, I propose that we develop a podcast as a way to reach that millennial audience who we already know loves podcasts. You see how that really narrows down the discussion? And becomes a proposal that people can respond to. I like that idea. I don't like that idea. My concern about the idea is this versus a completely blank canvas of responses and often actually crickets as a result of you not asking a specific question or making a specific proposal. In fact, when I speak to people who are running meetings, they have two tools they need. One is the agenda, but all the agenda does is say the table of contents for the meeting. The other thing a leader should prepare is points, 4 to 5 points, depending on the length of the meeting, of contentions, proposals, suggestions, encouragements that they want to make. If they don't pre-plan those points, those proposals, those suggestions, then they'll come up scattershot. They'll be overspoken because there'll be too many words in their head. They didn't plan it as a point. Really, getting back to your question, the number one way to make sure you don't overthink and thus overspeak is to plan your points in advance.
Now, sometimes we don't necessarily have an opportunity to prepare in advance. I'm just wondering, Joel, what are some of the ways that people can catch themselves overspeaking before they do?
Yeah, that sometimes we need to do things in real time. And what I recommend for people who open their mouths at a meeting is not to think about starting, but to think about ending. Focus on ending the communication that you're about to make. If you do that, then you see yourself coming to your goal of your point. If you just think about starting, it has no end already. And you just think about talking, and then you begin saying, and you begin saying, but. And one thing, Greg, that I want to bring up that just triggered a thought in me, I ask people to do what I call an and audit. And that's basically to be aware in your writing and your communication to the times you say the word and to see it as a red flag. Because very often when you say and, you're saying two things that are synonymic or that are synonyms that are so similar that you don't need to say both. And we know that less is more. We need to also understand that more is less. So if we try not to say compound sentences, if we're aware of when we say and that we may not need to, some people even end their sentences with and that's very problematic. Oh, I think we should do this and it's better because we do this. And I see in the future that we do this and that word forces them to overspeak. So be wary of that word. Focus on ending, not beginning when you speak. And try to, as much as possible, to plan your points in advance. Oh, one more thing that's actually critical. Sometimes when people ask questions, they overspeak with the questions. They have a big preface, and then they talk about why they're asking the question. Recognize that you ask a question with the sole purpose of receiving an answer, not to give a little speech. If you have that mindset as well, this is an honest question. This is not a question that's really about me speaking and making my point. Then you will have more effective meetings because you'll say your question succinctly and then get your answer.
It's interesting you mentioned, Dan, because I know when in impromptu speaking, no, not impromptu speaking, improv. I was just thinking about improv. Right. They always use the yes and to keep the conversation going instead of the but, which stops things.
Right, right. Well, this is not improv. I always say, be aware of the difference between presentation and performance. When you're performing, you have different goals than when you're presenting. You know, we don't say we perform a speech or perform a presentation. What do we say? We deliver a speech. We deliver a presentation. And in that word, deliver, we see the goal, whether you're speaking at a meeting or speaking at a conference. Your goal is to deliver your point. When that point is received, your job is done, even if you delivered it imperfectly.
I never thought of that. I was also thinking back the other time you use and, I see it happen in meetings all the time, is you keep using and so that it doesn't give anyone an opportunity to interrupt you.
Right, that's true. You know, I was just talking about that. I was giving a presentation at my local library last night. It often comes up. What do I do when I'm interrupted? I hate with that. You say, excuse me, I was speaking, which creates conflict and awkwardness. The advice is actually counterintuitive. You thank the person for interrupting you, and then you complete your thought. Jack, thank you for bringing that up. That's very interesting. I just want to extend on what I just said, or I just want to complete that thought so everyone is understanding. When you thank the person who's insulting you with their interruption, that's why it's counterintuitive, you disarm them. You actually granted them the ability and relieved them of the guilt of interrupting while still enabling yourself to complete your point.
That's brilliant.
Another thing that people should be aware of, whether they're participating in a meeting or leading one, is perfection is not the goal. You don't need to produce the perfect idea that will never need further iteration. You just need progress. For the same reason, unanimous agreement is not the goal. You just want progress. Do you have a majority of people agreeing with it, or do you have a way of addressing the concerns in another context? Even if a meeting's result is to create a second meeting to discuss some of these peripheral ideas, that is still a success of meeting economy.
I just keep thinking of some of the meetings that I've been in the past where they just get out of control, or you're actually there to try to solve a problem and it just ends up being a total free-for-all. You touched upon some of the consequences. What are some of the other consequences that can come from having all kinds of overspeaking in these meetings?
Yeah, there are a lot of severe consequences. When I say that it inhibits progress, I really mean that. Projects take more time. Projects get stalled. It also makes people less inclined to participate. Their morale goes down when meetings take too long. So it's just very destructive to the goals you're trying to reach. You know, imagine you're in a car that physically stalls. That's what happens when overthinking leads to overspeaking. And by the way, Greg, when we think about poorly run meetings, what do we say? Oh, gosh, there were too many meetings. Or, gosh, we don't need a two-hour meeting for this. That's not truly identifying the problem. Two meetings may be effective if you need two meetings. A three-hour meeting may make sense if you have a lot of topics to address urgently. The question is, are you being efficient with those meetings, moving from topic to topic, point to point, and making sure everybody realizes that they need to be succinct so you get to all the topics and so you get to all the people. Nothing annoys me more, Greg, than when somebody is ready, prepared to present something at a meeting, in fact, proud to present it in front of their bosses and colleagues, and time runs out for it because people were overspeaking or rabbit-holing or whatever reason. That is like scratching a chalkboard for me, because it is a lost opportunity for that person to share their points.
Oh, I thought there was more there.
Yeah, no, I like to think of the ending too.
You said share their points. You stopped on an uptick and I thought there was
more. Oh yeah, no, you're right. No, I was like, share points. And yeah, stick the landing. That's what I always say. But you're right. It's a good point, Greg. And if you could squeeze this in, when we end on an upspeak, on a high note and a high tone, often people think we have more to say. And that sounds like this. I have this idea, and I want to make sure people understand why it's important. And they've stopped in their mind. But because they ended up on a high pitch, people are expecting more from that. So when you come in for a landing, what I like to say, and I love it in gymnastics, is stick the landing, not only with the word, but end with a hard period. And if you can, end with a power period. That sounds like this. This is what we need to do. This is my best suggestion for moving forward versus up talk.
Okay, so we have meetings. We want to try to get through them efficiently. Now, sometimes you have a meeting where the goal is to really do some brainstorming. If we look back at leaders like Peter Drucker, right? He suggested that effective decision-making isn't always finding the right answer, but perhaps the most effective and appropriate one for the situation. So Joel, with that in mind, as a leader, how can you create a balance between encouraging input and driving decisions and try to avoid that overspeak?
I would say three things come to mind. One is to segmentize the brainstorm. All right, we have 2 hours to brainstorm. This is minute one. Who's got an idea? That's not going to be too successful. As opposed to saying, first, we're going to hear a presentation that'll give us background on this topic and this campaign. So we are educated before we start giving our ideas. And by the way, that's always a good idea. And don't rely on people to read it in advance or to do the homework. You take time in the meeting to do that, because people won't always do the homework. And then try to break up the brainstorming into segments. What are ways we can affect this internally? What are ways we can affect this externally? Let's talk about first some of the campaigns we've done in the past that have succeeded or that have not succeeded, and what we learned from them. So see, there are a number of ways to segmentize the conversation to prepare people for that discussion. Another way is to ask questions and to have questions in advance. What do you think is the best way to do this? Who has learned from this? What are examples of things where we've seen this before? So not just to say, all right, the mic is hot, go. People respond to questions more easily than they respond to go or blank canvases. So those are ways we can definitely set up the brainstorm so it has some success. And finally, the one big one is to really be clear with everybody about the goal. And the goal should never be to come up with the greatest idea ever. The goal is to move us closer. So maybe it's, I want to come out of this meeting with 5 concepts that I'm then going to call a meeting of our senior team or our executive leadership team. We'll review and ask questions, and I may come back to this group for that. So think about it as being part of a process that leads to an eventual idea or leads to an eventual impact, one that doesn't necessarily have to happen at that meeting.
I like that, because sometimes you see in meetings where it's sort of an open brainstorm, it's all over the place. So what you're actually doing is you're giving people the opportunity to say things, but you're also constricting where they're going so that you've got some kind of organization.
Yeah, I would call it controlling it so it's efficient versus something like limiting it. Or, you know, you don't want to put a hard stop on it either. You want to sort of control the way, because a good meeting manager or a meeting leader will say at the end, all right, I just want to review some of the ideas that I'm now going to bring to the executive leadership team. First, this concept, second, this concept, third, this concept. Does everyone agree that those are the ideas we want to put out? And is any of that fuzzy to anyone here? Let's take the last 10 minutes to discuss that. One of the things that a meeting leader needs to be aware of, and I learned this by making a mistake, is to be open-minded about ways the trajectory of that discussion may change. So I once went into a meeting that was supposed to be about how a CEO is going to present a series of ideas to staff. And I led with that. How can we use the CEO? Here are examples of the CEO doing this in the past. I'd love to hear how all of you in these different departments can utilize the CEO in this way. And you know what they most wanted, Greg? They wanted a video. They wanted to create a video that combined scenes of success and inspired people to think of their contribution to the company. And in fact, not use the CEO at all. So we eventually created a video without the CEO. And it was, in fact, more effective than had we used the CEO, who they saw as a guy who was sort of professorial, but not necessarily inspiring, at least in this context.
You must have had a real open-minded leader there, because someone goes in with an agenda and all of a sudden you leave with something totally different. That's incredible.
Yeah, you have to be open-minded and you have to actively listen. And I know we talked about this in the last podcast, but really listen to what people are saying, because sometimes you have to back up and say, oh, you know what? Maybe we're talking about a different idea. Let's get agreement on this new concept. Maybe it's not about the CEO looking into camera and talking to staff, but maybe it's more celebratory with a video of the successes that we have. Be open to that change in trajectory and to throwing out one idea because you have a better idea, thanks to the input and the responses from the people you're working with.
In the context of overspeaking, the quote that you included from Melody Wilding from HBR really sums it up. And you quoted, "It's important to remember that the goal is not to eliminate all deep thinking, but rather to prevent it from spiraling into the unproductive kind."
Right. I'm not against thinking. I'm not even against deep thinking. That's what we do based on our experience and our qualifications. What I'm saying is, you know, going back to that needs to know versus need to know, going back to that curiosity that you're relying on. It's about strategizing your thinking and your communications so that they're best serving the goals of the moment.
Beautiful. Now, Joel, we've spoken today a lot in the context of businesses and meetings and leadership. Now, this could also apply to perhaps a subordinate, but how could you politely perhaps tell a friend or a colleague or a family member that they're overspeaking without really offending them?
Well, one of the ways, and we discussed this, was having a meeting, a rabbit hole minder. And not just having that at the meeting, but saying to that person who reports to you, you know what, I notice at this meeting, there's been some overthinking that led to overspeaking. So you're not indicting that person in particular, but you're being general. So what we're going to do from here on is being a rabbit hole minder. In fact, would you like to serve as that rabbit hole minder at our first meeting? Wow, what a great way to have that person realize the problems with overspeaking, especially in themselves. Now, if you do have to address that person directly, what you want to do first is thank them for their curiosity, thank them for their commitment, but remind them, not that they're doing something bad, but that these meetings have goals, and you notice that meetings are ending with people not getting the opportunity to present and not having the opportunity to meet items 8, 9, and 10 on the agenda. That person you're speaking to will feel for that. You know, they won't argue, oh no, it's fine to have meetings where we don't get to half of the agenda. It's fine to have meetings where people don't get a chance to speak. They will totally agree with that. So if you put it that way and you find that point of agreement, they will understand that they need to curb their overspeaking, not because they're a bad person or a terrible communicator, but because it enables a more efficient meeting. It enables a meeting that meets its goals, and it enables everyone to get their chance to share their ideas.
Now, what about, again, a family member or a friend? I mean, I'm going to say, hey, let's go for coffee because I want to talk about the rabbit hole minder. And they're going to go, what?
Yeah, right. Maybe we should have rabbit hole minders at Thanksgiving dinners. Maybe that should be a thing that we can create. That's a little tough, but I would say that people can tactically interrupt when that happens. I wouldn't pull someone aside and say, listen, you know, you're kind of an over-talker. Have you ever realized that? Nobody's going to take really well to that. We don't really like criticism. It's the truth about most of us. But if when they're doing that, you say, oh, that's a good, you know, like I said at the meeting, interrupt them and say, oh, that's a really good point. You know, it makes me think of this other thing. Or interrupt them and say, oh, thanks for that. I never thought about it that way before. What I was really trying to understand was, so you see, if you interrupt with appreciation, with acknowledgement for what they were doing, then it is forgiven. And then you take that opening to cut them off in intent and continue with their thought. So my encouragement is not to call them out, but rather to strategically and appreciatively interrupt. What you can't do is have people go home when they've been sitting in your living room too long. But that's a talk for another day. I'm just talking about communication.
So folks, to go along with Joel's encouragement, if you have a friend or family member or fellow Toastmaster you know who may overspeak, I'm not implying that they do, wink, wink, I encourage you to share this episode with them. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Now, Joel, before we wrap up, once again, you've given us some true golden nuggets. If someone wanted to connect with you, reach out to you, find out more about your books, where's the best place for them to do that?
The best place for them to go is joelschwartzberg.net, joelschwartzberg, blame my parents, joelschwartzberg.net. And what I like to think of that platform as, and people in IT will appreciate this, I think of my work as open code. I want to share everything I've done. So if you click on articles, you will see all of the articles I've written for Toastmasters and Harvard Business Review. And because I like speaking in nuts and bolts, you'll see them based on particular skill sets. If you speak too quickly, if you're running meetings ineffectively, if you don't know your point, if you're scared about public speaking. So it's really easy to pick a topic in an article that matches your particular challenge.
Thanks, Joel. And of course, folks, don't forget to check out episode 213, Techniques for Supercharging Your Listening Skills. That was back from 2022. And of course, read Joel's article, Stop Talking So Much, Why People Overspeak and How to Keep Discussions Concise, which appears in the January 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Joel Schwartzberg, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. And thank you so much for your cats for not interrupting our conversation.
I tried. Thank you, Greg. And thank you to all the Toastmasters listening. And good luck on your public speaking and leadership journeys.